Hi, I'm the Strategist Cowboy. Before we delve into today's beer reviews, I am announcing an updated template again. I am doing my beer reviews in real time, but I have a template. It is difficult enough to review a beer in real time. I need a template. My template is now as follows. Cloudy, color, aroma, foam, first impression, richness, bread-like, yeasty, maltiness, taste on my palate, sweet or dry, bitterness or hoppiness, candy-like, fruitiness, spices, herbs, undertone, carbonation level, creaminess, acidic or not, and aberrations, and last, filtered or unfiltered. Today we are going to review one English low ABV pale ale and bitter beer and one German Bock beer. So as a Bock beer, the latter subsequently has a fairly strong ABV. They are in review order: Joshua Jane and Maybach. Our first contestant this week is the pale ale called Joshua Jane from the Ilkley Brewery in Yorkshire County in Northern England. The Joshua Jane beer assortment contains water, barley malt, oats, hops, and yeast. The hops are the UK sorts Brewer's Gold, Archer, WGW and Minstrel, and Sass from the Czech Republic, plus Fruggle from France. The malts are of the sorts Golden Promise, Caramalt, Crystal, Munich, and Imperial, all UK cultivated. The beer is probably very bitter, since it says on the bottle label, Yorkshire bitter. But I'm not sure that the beer is going to taste any better just because it has many sorts of hops and malts in it. It'll probably just make the beer assortment more complex or confused and difficult to distinguish flavors in. It may still be of good quality and flavor. We'll see in a minute. This particular beer is good until I don't know. The best before date is absent on the bottle, as often is with English beers in these post-Brexit times. I purchased this beer in mid-April 2022, and the beer has been standing in my cooler for the whole time since I purchased it. So it should be fresh and good. The Joshua Jane beer assortment comes in a 50 centiliter or 17 liquid ounces bottle. The bottle label is two-folded and mostly orange in color and features the Ilkley Brewery, presumably, on the front label. The beer costs about 28 Swedish kronor, i.e. $2.70. That is 64 cents per 4 ounces of beer, which is pretty cheap for what I think is a quality beer by the look of it. I contend that you often can decide if a beer is going to have a nice flavor just by the look of the bottle and its label. But it is a low ABV beer. That need not affect the beer's flavor, since there is no absolute connection between low ABV and poor flavor, just as there is no absolute connection between high ABV and good flavor. There is some connection between the look of a can and its contained beer's flavor. But it is not an equally strong connection as with bottles and beer. The preferred serving temperature is, according to Sustainablogget, 10 to 12 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 50 to 54 degrees Fahrenheit. The brewery says nothing about preferred serving temperature. The pale ale Joshua Jane has got a mere 3.7% ABV, less than an average pilsner, despite it being an ale. But I am optimistic. How about the experience then? Let's open it up. A little odd flavor, aroma. Not bad, but odd. It's probably the oats. Yes, it is. It's got a very, very small head. It's not even one finger. It's pretty much absent. The foam, the head. And its color is, one moment. It's cloudy and its color is, it's not, it's very cloudy. The color is brownish. Yeah. Brownish, cloudy. The aroma is good. It's good. It's a good aroma. The first impression, it's fresh, crispy, or crisp. Yes, it is. It's good. My first impression is, I don't think I'm going to change my first impression. That's my first impression. Is it rich? Not very, but it, of course it's 3.7%. ABV level, and so it's not very rich, but it's certainly not watery. It's a little bit, I wouldn't say that it's particularly bread-like. No, I would. It would be going too far to say that it is. Is it yeasty? Well, it's an ale, but not very yeasty. Perhaps a little bit. Yeah. It's. I think I can sense the maltiness in it, even though it's bitter or hoppy. The two things doesn't necessarily have to go against each other. I mean, they can, a beer can be both bitter or hoppy and malty, I think, since the hoppiness and maltiness are two different things, two different flavors or spice. Taste on my palate. I like this crispy taste on my palate. It's really good on my palate. I like it. It's not very sweet, but not very dry either. And the bitterness or hoppiness is, of course, prevalent. It's not an unpleasant bitterness in any way. It's a round beer, I think. It is. Not candy-like. No, it's more a little bit fruity by orange peely or lemon peely. Lemon peely. It's like lemon peels, the taste. And it's probably spiced up. But it can be the hoppiness and the bitterness. The undertone of this beer. It's the bitterness, but it's very prevalent. So I'd say that the undertone is I don't know actually. It's a little bit complex beer, a little bit, but not very much. The carbonation level, I think it's normal, but I don't know. We'll see later. Creaminess, no. It's not acidic and there are no aberrations. I'd say that this beer, it reminds me of an unfiltered beer, didn't I? I state that it was an unfiltered beer. I don't know. I look here. I don't know, but actually, it's difficult to tell sometimes or many times if it is unfiltered or filtered. I think it's filtered, if I have to say something about it. But it's not for sure. And it might be it. No, I wouldn't say. You could say it's a little bit fudge-like, but it's going also a little bit too far. What about grading then? I must grade this beer And I don't care that it's only 3.7% ABV. This is a good beer. They know what they're doing at the Ilkley Brewery. I agree, this beer. Eight tables out of 10 possible. For any beer. And for a 3.7% beer. That's really good. So, eight tables out of 10 possible. They have other beers at Ilkley Brewery that are stronger. And I don't know what they taste like. I haven't tried them. But I could definitely buy this beer, to purchase this beer in the future. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to our next contestant. Well, it was a pretty well carbonated beer. I found out while I was taking a break and pause. Our second contestant for this week is the German Bock beer assortment, Maibock, from the brewery BRLO, Braukunst Berlin GmbH. GmbH is a German abbreviation for Gesellschaft mit beschränkter Haftung, meaning company with limited liability. GmbH, equivalent to LTD used in the UK or Inc. in the US, is the most common form of incorporation in Germany. The ingredients in the lager Bock beer, Maibock, are water, malted barley, hops, and yeast. It is a Reinheitsgebot beer, like all German beers. But as a Bock beer, it has been stored in the bottle for several weeks to ferment a little longer to get a stronger ABV level. I, of course, did a check on BRLO's website, and it doesn't look like their Maibock beer assortment is marketed any longer. So I don't know much about the Maibock beer other than what I could find out on Systembolaget's website. Actually, the Maibock beer assortment wasn't even to be found on their webpage over their many drunk out beer assortments, i.e. beers that are sold out. This particular beer is good until, but not including, December 2022, according to the best before date on the bottle. I purchased this beer in mid-March 2022. The Maibock beer assortment comes in a slender, brown, pretty standard, unimpressive bottle. The bottle is size 33 centiliters, or about 11 liquid ounces. The bottle label is two-folded and simple. The front label is just a couple of colored circles, and it says BRLO in bold Slavic letters with the name Maibock beneath. Still, the bottle looks like it can deliver. But here I must make a stand against the average German. This brewery is racist against the Slavic people and their language. I guess the Polish. As usual, they hype their own language, this time by making a derogatory statement about a particular Slavic language. The brewery states on their website, quote, "By the way, BRLO is the old Slavic name for Berlin, and can only be pronounced without mistakes after a few beers," end quote. They probably thought they were being funny. They were not. The world has yet to see a comedic German. It is not in them to give a bit of themselves, to make fun of themselves for a little while. They can only make fun of others, non-Germans, that is. What would Sigmund Freud have to say about that? Sigmund Freud was a German? But seriously, curtains, you Nazi shitheads. The step from a hyped up and openly expressed belief of your own superiority in engineering and also your hyped up and openly expressed belief in the superiority of the logic in your language to Nazism is short. The step is short. Check, Germany, your move. The brewery could try and hide behind their green, since they do seek to make money in a decadent society ran by a minority of freethinkers. They state on their website, quote, "The BRLO pride season has 12 months, and actually every one of our beers is queer," end quote. Why would they say such a thing if they are not queers themselves? I don't think they are. The most likely explanation, I think, is that they want to make money in a decadent society, even if it means that they have to sell their souls. The second most likely explanation is that they are leftists today, but Nazis tomorrow. I mean, they do express themselves racist against the Slavic people, and there has got to be a reason for that. And furthermore, you cannot hold them accountable. They have no public contact form or email address. Who does that? Anyway, the Maybach beer assortment costs about 20 Swedish kronor, i.e. $1.95. That is 71 cents per 4 ounces of beer. That is kind of cheap, particularly since it has a pretty strong ABV. The preferred serving temperature is, according to Systembolaget, 8 to 10 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 46 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. The brewery says nothing about preferred serving temperatures. The BRLO beer assortment, Maybach, has got a robust 6.5% ABV. As should a Bock beer have. How about the experience then? Not much of an aroma, but it is a lager beer. It's cloudy and yellowish in color, about one finger tall head. First impression. Well, distinct. It is rich. Let's see here. Sometimes I need support from what I've written. And I need that now because okay. It says nothing about that, but what is this taste? I don't know. peach-like, or maybe apricot-like. Or honey-like. I don't know actually what it's, what taste it is. But it's the first impression is that it's a unique beer. If you like this beer, you like it. I would say hints of apricot or apricot in it, not only hints, but yeah, it's rich. I don't think it's very much bread-like because the apricot, it takes out the, it tastes more like apricot or I think it's yeasty, but I'm not sure. I think so. It's it's malty, I think. Let's look at the bottle. It doesn't say, but apricot, maltiness, it's not very sweet, but it's still got apricot taste in it. Or honey taste, perhaps. So it's both. It's not sugary sweet, but it's sweet or smooth. The bitterness is not very bitter. It's a little bit candy-like, pretty much like apricot honey and yeah, fruity in that sense. I'm not sure they have spices in it, but maybe some herbs, I don't know. The undertone is I don't really like the undertone of this beer, but it's my personal view on it. The carbonation level, I don't know. Difficult to say now. I don't think it's high. No, it's not. It's not high. It's not creamy. It's not acidic, but that. And it's not an aberration in, but it's an underlying tone that I don't particularly like. It seems unfiltered. Excuse me. Excuse me. Okay, what about grading then? This is not a beer for me. I won't buy it again. I won't purchase this beer another time. It's a little bit odd or strange. I grade this beer for my taste buds, 5 devils out of 10 possible, or 4 devils out of 10 possible. It's not a bad made beer. It's not badly made. It's crafted, but it's not, in my opinion, a good beer for my taste buds. So 5 devils out of 10 possible. That's all I can say. Other people might have rated it higher, but not me. It's a little bit sweet in its taste. If I'm going to continue the review, I think it is. Okay, absolutely don't drink and operate heavy machines, military or civilian. Drink responsibly or not at all. Don't drink at all if you're underage or pregnant. Today's lesson is number 6 of a series of lessons about China. I call it China, the Silk Road. Will it be difficult because of mountainous areas to connect the Chinese railway line to the already existing railway that extends south of the Caspian Sea from east to west through Iran and into central Turkey and Ankara and beyond to Istanbul? There is nothing that suggests it. The oil from Baku must reach further. Otherwise, it would make no sense to build a railway line from Baku to Turkey. But the oil does not come by railway trains. There are existing oil pipelines from Baku to Istanbul via Georgia, and from Baku to Turkey's southeast coastal area via Georgia. Russia is present in Syria's western coastal area, south of Turkey, with a naval base in Tartus, with the S-400 and S-300 air defense systems deployed, and an air base protected by air defense systems in Latakia, located about 100 kilometers, i.e. 62 US miles, north of Tartus. Given these oil pipes running through Turkey and the railway line that looks like it stops indefinitely on my map, who knows where it will be drawn next? There are reportedly also 40,000 Russian citizens in Syria, of which most probably are tourists in the unharmed Tartus or Latakia, or the rather untouched central Aleppo, whose presence should not be extenuated when Russia implements its major strategy plans and tries to obstruct others. China wants to expand the oil pipelines to Turkey's southeastern coastal area. Russia probably does not want this, as long as China also aspires to expand the One Belt, One Road by land towards Europe, because this threatens Russia's southern front. Russia is thus dependent on the turncoat state of Turkey, and that Beijing does not have Turkey in their pocket. And they have, among other things, therefore, had negotiations with Turkey about initiating a sale of the S-400 Triumph air defense system to the country. Turkey has already made an advance payment and was hoping for delivery by 2019. I'm not sure they have got it now in 2022. The issue was discussed according to what Kremlin advisor Vladimir Kozin told the Russian news agency TASS in September 2017. The Russian leadership is often forced to concentrate resources, preparations, and efforts to Russia's southern and eastern borders. Many times it is of a military and economic nature. These playfields are primarily much more important for Russia's security than the Baltic issue is. Much of their strategy in the Northwest is a luxury they can sometimes engage in. Azerbaijan, Georgia, and Turkey thus put an 826-kilometer, i.e. 513 US miles long railway on their territories, and this was reported in November 2017. The question is whether the Chinese want or intend to resolve the issue of how to pass over or under the 300 kilometers, 186 miles long stretch of the Caspian Sea. Traveling 300 kilometers across the Caspian Sea from Turkmenistan to the oil-rich Baku by ship is a realistic solution. They also probably see a solution with an existing railway line south of the Caspian Sea in Iran. I don't think Russia is happy about these plans, because the influence over the oil-rich Baku is slipping over to China's court. The Russian interest will, despite a Russian war in Ukraine, probably be shifted to the south and towards China in the near future. But in St. Petersburg and in Kaliningrad, Russia's plans will continue as usual. It is cunningly done by the Chinese to make Azerbaijan, Georgia, and Turkey invest in China's evil schemes for Europe. But this railway is just one of all the railways, roads, and ferries, which together make up the modern Chinese Silk Road Economic Belt project. Bit by bit and under obscurity, they are single-mindedly building on this logistical venture's partly civilian project and partly military project. The Silk Road is the largest logistic project of all time, which requires a well-developed infrastructure, project planning, and investments in transit countries. The problem with the Silk Road project is not primarily that there are no good roads. It is laying down oil and gas pipelines, the creation and maintenance of infrastructure such as gas stations, service stations, power stations, drinking water, animal husbandry, agricultural production, food processing, and irrigation projects in the Silk Road transit countries that the challenge consists in. It requires even more fuel and resources of fresh water. Creating opportunities for this can easily be a geopolitical gamble. It will be difficult to provide maintenance support for entire armies. Deserts must be crossed, and power plants require fuel. Nuclear power plants require water. Personnel require drinking water. Perhaps one has to bypass some of the railways with a regular road where the transported vehicles move on their own machine. But they can also lay down water pipes to the steam generator in nuclear power plants. Not even on a multi-track railway can you transport as many combat vehicles as needed in a short time. Towing vehicles, drinking water, fuel, tires, service personnel, spare parts, and rolling mechanical service stations for trucks will require a large part of the space in the trains. Iran doesn't lack oil, but they have a quality on their oil that is not suitable for making diesel from, which means that diesel is rationed and reserved for Iranian truck drivers. Locomotives probably require relatively flat ground if they are to be able to pull long and heavy trains fully loaded with tanks and fuel. That being said, the world's highest railway line is Chinese and crosses the Kunlun Shan 3,000 to 5,000 meters above sea level. It is called the Qingzhang Railway. It is conceivable that a railway line, if it is not stretched over or through mountains, runs from Inner Mongolia, belonging to China, to Gansu, to the Uyghur land Xinjiang, into Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and Turkmenistan, and further via southern Iran, along the coast of the Persian Gulf, and further northwest through Iraq, Iraq and Syria, and southern Turkey. In a war, southern Turkey becomes the most vulnerable stretch, requiring control of the eastern Mediterranean. From Beijing to Istanbul, the train route is 14,000 kilometers, i.e. 8,700 US miles of country road, which I describe above. But the Chinese may have to punch at least one hole in the Chinese wall, which is actually several walls from different eras and which are on the UNESCO World Heritage List. The Chinese are planning infrastructure investments for a railroad, a country road, and oil pipelines between the port city of Gwadar in southwestern Pakistan and Kashgar in western China, or are already building them. It sounds quite logical. What then follows causally is that China completes the port of Gwadar for their naval forces and merchant ships in southern Pakistan at the Arabian Sea and a military airport. If they get permission from Pakistan. According to the Financial Times web release in May 2011, Pakistan's defense minister has requested from China to build a Chinese military base for Gwadar's port. In Uganda, and actually the whole region around the Victoria Lake, 1,200 kilometers, i.e. 745 US miles, southwest of Djibouti, there are giant oil reserves. It does not have to be said that the great powers are fighting hard for these oil deposits, which are estimated to exceed the total oil reserves of the OPEC countries put together. It has been established that the total raw material resources under the Caspian Sea is almost twice as large as all commodity assets in the whole of the United States. Kurdistan has the so-called Taktak field and has increased its production of oil more than 100 times from 2,000 barrels of oil a day since new discoveries were discovered in the double zeros. But this was even a while ago. On the border between Kazakhstan and Russia, there are huge reserves in the Karachaganak field, 42 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, as well as liquid natural gas and crude oil. In Turkmenistan, there are gas assets of no less than 700 trillion calculated cubic feet in the ground, the fourth largest deposit in the world. In addition, gold mines in Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan are part of the Tian Shan Belt. These are the second largest gold deposits in the world, after the Witwatersrand Mountain in South Africa. Both beryllium, dysprosium, and other rare earth element metals have been found in Kazakhstan. These are important in the manufacture of mobile phones, laptops, and rechargeable batteries, as well as uranium and plutonium, which are necessary for nuclear energy. In eastern Ukraine, towards the border with Russia, in the Donetsk Basin, where there is a war going on, there are coal resources with up to about 10 billion tons. U.S. Geological Service states that there are 1.4 billion barrels of oil and 2.4 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, in addition to considerable amounts of liquid natural gas. Also, the fertile black topsoil of Ukraine and southern Russia is sought after. A non-governmental organization has concluded that land worth nearly $1 billion in Ukraine alone was being dug up and sold annually. Crop failure and war in Ukraine affect both the price of technology products, crops, and oil. An expanded and existing railway line between China, Germany, will reach Paris. Major investments in those transcontinental rail lines have opened for freight routes along the more than 11,000 kilometers, i.e. 6,835 US miles long international Loxinos Railway, which runs from China to Duisburg in Germany. 874 yards long trains have begun to transport millions of laptops, shoes, clothing, and other consumer goods in one direction, and the electronics, car parts, and medical equipment in the other, on a journey that takes 16 days. Significantly faster than the sea route from Chinese ports in the Pacific, according to the source The Silk Roads by Peter Frankopan. We know that the U.S. facilitates the economic development of the Central Asian former Soviet Republic STAN countries. But it can be for more than one reason. Why do you think the U.S. do this? Excuse me. I mean, they have already left Afghanistan. And the sources for these lessons are The Silk Roads by Peter Frankopan and Esther Ekut. Thank you, and see you later, alligator, at a wild crocodile.